The team at Violent Gentlemen saw what I could do at their weekly skate and decided it was time to make our relationship official. Proud to announce the newest sponsor of the Eat 'Em Up podcast, Orange County's finest Violent Gentlemen Hockey Club.
Get ready for some hot takes, off-the-wall topics, and candid conversations with current and former players. It's time for Eat 'Em Up with Emerson Edom.
What up, Duck fans? Thanks for tuning in to yet another epi of Eat 'Em Up, and we have a very, very special guest in SoCal's finest. I'm saying SoCal's finest.
Let's go.
Chase DeLeo.
Let's go.
Chase, thanks for just joining the show, and I'm really looking forward to this one because the main topic, the main point of the conversation is maybe if I'm a player, hey, I want to make it to the show, or I want to make it to the highest levels of hockey in general. You know, what is it going to take, maybe from a mentality standpoint, preparation, and if all the parents of players, if you have either a son or daughter, hey, as a parent, what can I do to maybe better position my son or daughter to best put them in a position to make it to the highest level of hockey, whether it's the Olympics for, you know, the women's game or D1 college hockey, of course, obviously for males, NHL Olympics as well. So I was almost taken aback by, I had one player instance and I had one parent instance of the player came up to me and just, hey, do you think I'm ready for playing in the Western League? And I thought to myself, I'm like, why are you asking me? You know, like, You should be the one saying, hey, I'm ready to go, right? Like, why is it up to me? You know, it's all about the player or for the parent, too. You know, same kind of question. It was like, hey, you know, son was a goalie and hey, is my goalie ready for he was actually talking about the USPHL. Hey, do you think my son's ready to tend to in one of these teams in the USPHL? I'm like, that's not up to me. Like, why are you asking me? I mean, it's got to be up to the player. So, I mean, do you want to touch on just, I mean, that dynamic of preparation leading up to a team you want to make or, you know, can you touch on that?
Yeah, absolutely. First off, thanks for having me in the studio. Yeah. Always a pleasure. For me, as you know, being from Southern California, I actually grew up watching you and Bo Bennett and these guys were really what drove me and motivated me. And for me personally, just to see you guys do it before me, kind of, you know, being from California gave me that hope. And luckily enough for me, you know, my family, we have a plumbing supply wholesale business, not super involved in the sports world. So my parents just were always kind of there for me as support and never really told me what was wrong or what was right. And just always kind of let me make my decisions, but were there for me. Kind of learn together, I guess, you know, going through all these camps in the summers. Obviously, I had to make that decision as well, going back to the Western Hockey League or if I was going to go to the national program and go to college, you know. It was very tough. You know, you're 14 years old for me at the time, having to make a pretty big life-changing decision. And like I said, luckily enough for my parents, you know, they were just so supportive and didn't really lead me in any direction, kind of led me make my own mind up. And were obviously there with me in Portland when I decided to go there and there and with me in Ann Arbor, you know, when I went to that top 40 national development team camp. And like you said, I think it's nice for a kid to have an open mind and make a choice by himself and have that guidance. But that being said, it's like you need to have in your mind, you can't have any second guessing, especially from California. You know, my mom told me, Chase, there's a 1% chance you're going to make it to the NHL being from California. And I looked at her and I said, well, I'm going to be that 1%, you know, I'm going to take that chance. And by me taking that chance at the time, you know, I have a late birthday, which is a late draft. It just made more sense for me at the time. You know, I went to Portland, saw Ryan Johansson, saw Nito Niederreiter, saw Sven Barchi. You know, you go down the list and I'm like, I'm on the ice with these guys that are already drafted. They already played World Juniors. I'm like, let's go. This is my decision. You know, I kind of looked at my parents and I said, you know, I want to have no regrets when I look back at it. You know, I'm just going to just go for it. And, you know, that was a decision I made. There's no wrong or right decisions. And at the time, that's kind of what I went with. And I enjoyed every second.
I love that answer because, A, it's you literally hit on everything we're going to maybe dive a little bit deeper into on this episode. And then just talking about that 1% and just going back to the original question of, you just got to want it. Right. And there's only, you know, I think it's probably less than 1%. You mentioned 1%. What the exact, but it is, you know, that narrow of margins to make it to the highest levels. And you just, you can't, and Willie Desjardins, and I probably mentioned it on this show before, is that feeling of I won't be denied,
yeah.
right? Like just, I will sacrifice everything, time with friends,
right.
you know, and a story that I have is what it took for me to get to workout when I was 13, 14. I worked out at the original Gold's Gym in Venice Beach, California. Yeah. So it would take me, and I'd probably wake up at around 6 a.m. at the time. So I literally 5 minutes. It was up at 6, out the door at probably 6:05. It took me a half hour to rollerblade from my house to the Blue Line, downtown Long Beach. It took a half hour from the Blue Line to the Green Line station. I think it was Rosa Parks. You hopped off the Blue Line. You got on the Green Line. It was another half hour to LAX Aviation. And then you have to hop on the big blue bus for 45 minutes, right down Lincoln. And God knows what I saw. Rolled through Lincoln Boulevard, Venice Beach at 13, 14. And then I had to hop off the bus, rollerblade to the Gold's Gym, which is like 15 minute rollerblade. So we're talking 2 hours, 45 minutes before the workout even began, crushed the two and a half hour workout. And then you had that 2.5 hour commute back. And that was at the time, Monday through Friday. And then my parents would drive me on the Saturdays. But I mean, that was a lot of time where in the summer, your buddies are just fooling around.
Yeah, big time.
Right. You know, up to no good. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to, you know, and I think you can definitely make the argument that things are different here. And even Bo Bennett's case at the same time, I mean, he stayed till a senior year and he had the late birth year, kind of right. like you. Yep. So he fell in that next draft, but he stayed in California, went his draft year to Penticton, lit it up and was still a first rounder. Right. So when parents think about, hey, you know, I want to go here, it's going to get me here. It's just, if you're good enough, yeah, if you're good enough, you work hard enough, people find you. It doesn't matter if you're here or Timbuktu, seriously.
Yeah.
And so I love that point that you made of preparation. Hey, there should be zero doubts in the player's mind, parent mind. It's, hey, I'm going in, I'm making this team. There is no, you know, do I think I'm, you're just opening up the door for others to come in and swoop your spot. Like
Absolutely.
You have one goal in mind. It's the first second of the tryout or, you know, whatever, first day of training camp, whatever the case may be. You have to be the guy or you have to be the girl. Like you have to be dominant. And it starts with that mentality heading into these things, no different than a shift in the NHL, wherever you're playing, like someone's going to take your spot. If you're not dialed in and just have one thing in mind and that's just being the guy or being the girl. Talk about roller hockey, us being from SoCal. Yep. Did you start roller? Did you kind of go back and forth as you were young and coming up here in the rinks in SoCal?
Yeah. First off, just touch on your story. You know, I feel like all that extra work that you put in and you know you're doing it when nobody else really does, it just kind of gives you that extra jam and that confidence, you know, knowing all that work that you're putting in, it's got to pay off, you know, whether you're working in the dark or you're posting, everybody's seeing it. You know, if you have hype, that's great, but it doesn't matter at the end of the day, you know, when you show up, nothing else matters. So I just want to touch on that. And like I said, I got Against All Odds tattooed on me. It was one of my first tattoos, you know, just kind of touching on our story. Now it's just a good reminder. When I look down, you know, it's like, you know, I just never want to be denied. And even still, you know, I see you outside of the locker room last training camp, you know, in Anaheim, right after the preseason games. And I said, you know, like, why not me? You know, why not me? And it's, you almost have to just tell yourself that, whether you're tricking yourself or you're tricking your mind or not, it's, you have to have that belief. And if you don't have that self-belief, it's not going to happen for you. And going back to the roller hockey, that's what, where it all got started. A guy named Michael Worth, who was my next door neighbor, had season tickets actually to the Kings. And he was always out in this, actually in the street, you know, with one of those orange roller balls and slapping around, and had me come over one day, hitting the ball around in the street. And sure enough, his dad's best friends with Bob Hartley at the time when he was coaching the Colorado Avalanche, and he was in town, and they actually took me to a Kings game that same day. And Got to go down to the locker room, and I'm seeing all these guys, you know, Joe Sakic and Peter Forsberg and Patrick Waugh. And I'm like, oh my God, all I wanted at the time was a stick. You know, I'm just dying to grab a stick from one of these guys. And since then, it's like I got this VHS tape of the Colorado Avalanche on their quest to the Cup. And I watched that same VHS every single day. I sat in front of my little TV, watched it over and over again until it literally was just memorized in my head pretty much. And like you said, so I definitely started off playing roller hockey. I played for the OC Blades coast to coast, and Huntington Beach had the best chicken teriyaki bowls in the world. Never forget that. RIP coast to coast. Still got our banners probably in the dumpster back there somewhere. But
shout out to Coast to Coast for the bomb food.
Yeah, it's so good. And no, you know, it's never ending. My poor parents, you know, at the when you're going through it at the time, you're just playing, you're hanging out with your buddies, you know, you're having a good time, and you're not really focused on how much work it takes to get you to the rink, like you touched on, just getting to the gym. And you know, my poor parents, every single day they go to work, take me to hockey, pick me up from hockey. You know, rinse, repeat. It's the same thing. And for me, you know, as roller hockey was no different. It's like the travel was still there. Like every weekend or whatever, there's a tournament somewhere, you know, and my parents are flying me somewhere, driving me somewhere. And I still have fun playing roller hockey. I actually played Narch a few years back at the pro division. I had a few of my buddies. I had Brennan Lemieux, and I had AJ Greer play with me in this past one. And AJ Greer is a pretty gritty guy. He likes to chop it up out there, and he wasn't down for the roller hockey game. You know, he's not a California guy, so he was getting a little pissed off out there at some of the plays, you know, holding the puck and ragging the puck, just chasing the puck around. So it's pretty funny to see other hockey guys kind of transition to roller when they're not familiar with it.
Yeah, and talk about some maybe life lessons. And I want to give my own example real quick and tee it up for you. In a sense, I remember there was one practice where, so this was a roller, this was a little bit after my roller days. I started at roller when I was four, probably two and a half, maybe 3 years. Maybe I dabbled in both for a while, ice and roller. Yeah. Started in-house ice when I was, say, about six. And right around that time, six, seven, eight, maybe it was into squirt. I played my first travel squirt double B, I think it was, or no, excuse me, it was Mike double B. So it might've been the squirt year. It was at a summer clinic, and there's this really good Russian kid. I want to say his name was Nico. He had a greasy mullet.
Yeah,
and
sick,
you sick. Got a nice mullet. My son's actually rocking the mullet now. Love it looks it. Pristine. Yeah. There was one time where mullets were somewhat frowned upon, right?
Dicey, like, definitely dicey. They're back.
They're back now. But this is the time where it's like, God, that thing is great. Like, what's going on at the home light right now?
You know? Sus, a little sus.
So long story short, he could back it up with his game. He was unbelievable. Just once again, small Russian kid, greasy mullet, sick hands. But it was at the end of one practice, and it was like a weekly, you know, summer, once a week skills, maybe a shooting stick handling type deal. And we did a little back skate at the end, maybe 5-10 minutes. And he was a kid that was always talked about. Everyone knew he was the best out there on the ice. When we got into these mountains, of course they're called, right? Yeah. It's goal line, blue line back, goal line, red line back, goal line, far blue line and back, and then goal line and back. He probably shaved a foot off each line. He was stopping premature, about a foot and a half, maybe it was even two. He was beating. So he was probably first, I was second in each line. And when we finished the whole thing, maybe we went through, I can't remember specifically, but maybe we did a couple mountains and he beat me each and every time. I know he was cheating. That led me to cheat. And, you know, once again, he was fast. He was going fast. He was in first place each rep. And then, you know, I was right there, but I felt myself, in order to at least tie or try to, you know, beat him, I had to stop short,
right?
Foot and a half, 2 feet, whatever he was doing. I think I still ended up losing regardless, but I've never seen my dad so mad. He called me, whatever, the coach talked, blew the whistle down, coach spoke, you know, we broke and went off to the locker rooms. Before I entered the locker room, my dad pulled me aside. He's never really yelled. This is the only time he's yelled. He's like, don't you ever bleep do that again.
Yeah, I love that.
And it stuck with me. Like right from that point on, never shaved off anything. There was no cut in the corners, high low drills. There was no cut in that first strong side dot. Like, I was always 5 feet above. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I always made sure that I went above the dots on high lows or mountains. I stopped on the line. So from that moment on, never cheated.
Right.
I look at that as just compounding interest. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, every time, in a negative way, like anytime you cut a foot off a mountain, like, think about how much that adds up, right? And I mean, that's a foot.
And it doesn't lie, you know? Like, you can't hide those little things, especially when you get up to this level. It's the little percentages of the difference. So, like you said, that's such an important lesson, I think. It's like, no matter what, and it comes back to, you're only hurting yourself in the end.
Sometimes I have trouble picking what to wear, so I stock the closet exclusively with heavy hitters. My friends at Violent Gentlemen Hockey Club have stacked my closet full in support of the pod, and they'd like to stock yours as well. They've been putting the fan first for over 12 years right here in Orange County. Timeless design paired with enduring quality, run by some of the best folks I've ever met. Shop now at VGHC.com.
And, you know, you mentioned your mom. You mentioned your mom. Hey, you know, Chase, there's only 1%. She lobbed that up to you. You had a great response. Is there anything, whether your parents, from an advice perspective, they had that, you know, was passed down to you at any moment in time? Or was there an experience where you look back now, and just touching back on my story, it's like, where's that kid? Where's that little Russian kid with the greasy mullet now? You know, I would remember his name. I don't remember his name without seeing it again. But if I saw it again, I was like, okay, I know that would never probably, be, you know.
Probably still has the mullet.
Yeah, probably. He's on Bennett. He's on Lincoln Boulevard still. Yeah. So, like, can you think to a story that it's like, wow, I don't remember that kid? Or there's something that, you know, you did, someone else was cutting the corners, or just an advice, more advice that your parents, you know, laid down to you?
Yeah, it's a great story. And I think that's... I mean, it still sticks with me today. You know, I can relate to that, you know, not cutting corners because you're only hurting yourself in the end. And I think for me, you know, I actually started out playing goalie, which is crazy. I mean, I'm an undersized guy. You know, at the time I was 4 years old when I started the Norwalk Knights. Down in Norwalk, there was a little rink there right by a dairy farm. I knew I was getting close to the rink because it absolutely just stunk. You know, I could smell the cows.
Shout out to the Norwalk Knights.
Yeah. And I had a Russian goalie coach. His name was German. And I don't even think he was a goalie coach.
I remember him. I remember. Yeah, I remember German. Yeah.
He used to ride his bike to the rink, actually.
I didn't know he was a goalie. That's why I remember the name. I didn't know he was a goalie.
So I was just a little goalie. I was number 19 in a net, though, you know, because I loved Joe Sakic. So it looked pretty weird. I had an Avalanche jersey, a little goalie. And, I couldn't understand him, you know, but he would just always be screaming at me, like telling me to drop into my butterfly and drop into my butterfly and screaming at me. And I'm like, you know, I don't think I'm not cut out to be a goalie, you know. So I switched pretty quickly to be a forward. And I think ever since then, I just ran with it. I just stuck with it. And I mean, I didn't play other sports. You know, I think it's important for parents to put their kids in other sports. You know, it's good to make them an all-around athlete and very athletic. But for me, I didn't have time to do anything else. You know, I think I played t-ball maybe for, you know, a few days, but like I was at that rink, as you know, like every single day grinding. There was no other choice for me. There was, oh no, maybe I'll play baseball or maybe I'll play football. It's like, no, it was hockey. Since I was 3-4 years old, there was no other choice for me. So, you know, it was not like I had really another option in my mind. That was what, you know, I already had that made up in my head. And I don't know. I think it was important that I kind of, you know, learned on my own and made that decision. Like I said, you know, it's like I found out pretty quickly I didn't want to be a goalie. And then obviously I transitioned into ice, into a forward and kind of just stuck with it. Had a little more fun scoring goals and going to these tournaments. And I mean, I don't know. I think it's exciting. This is my dream, you know, for me to be able to play for the Anaheim Ducks, you know, it's like to be in this room and to be sitting with you. It's like life happens so fast. And, you know, I look back at, you know, when we were little and now we're here sitting, you know, I used to watch you playing. I'd go to stay after my practice, you know, just to see you out there playing and, you know, and just giving me that hope and that little light, you know, that it can be done. And I think it's just cool to kind of come full circle, and it's been a cool journey, and I'm excited to keep it going.
Appreciate that.
Give me some bumps, bro.
Once again, touching on that, and I have once again, I'll
Oh, actually, sorry. I'll add on to that. I'll add on to your point about when I was so I played for the LA Hockey Club, LA Select, and we were a pretty dominant powerhouse. We were the group of the 1995s. We had the same team under Sandy Gassow for about 7 years. I think we won 3 national championships, and you know, it was get a lot of points, play a lot, and like I said, then I decided to go to Portland and play for the Winterhawks, and I have a late birthday, so I'm 15 years old, still got a cage, and I'm in the equipment room, and I can't wear a visor yet because I'm too young. I have to be 16. So getting the cage put on, and Travis Green, just announced coach, obviously, Ottawa, came around the corner, and he looked at me and he said, "Hey, just want you to know, from here on out, nothing is going to be given to you. Everything is earned." And that stuck to me. That's all he needed to say, you know, as a 14, 15 year old kid coming from California, all of a sudden starting in the Western Hockey League, hearing that, you know, I was a little bit taken back. I was kind of like, whoa, I just came back after winning, you know, 3, you know, USA Hockey National Championships. And then to hear him say that and kind of just, you know, I just took that in, you know, and even to this day, you know, you got to work for everything. And just to touch on your message, you know, that was something that I've kept my entire life, you know, since he said that to me. I thought that was super helpful and super motivating and so true, you know. So I appreciate Travis Green for kind of putting that in my head and keeping that with me.
And him, even at the time, was this renowned coach, right? He wasn't just some Joe Schmo, middle of the mall coach. I mean, he was at that time, you know, there's a reason why he quickly escalated in the ranks of coaching the National Hockey League. And a lot of times those short, simple, sweet messages just go the furthest. Right. And touching back maybe prior to the Portland day, I want to get in on that decision between college and juniors in a second, but were you ever cut from any teams, growing up? Maybe the post-goalie era, maybe leading up to just Winterhawks time?
Yeah, definitely. You know, like we do those USA Hockey festivals every summer, whether it was in Rochester or wherever, you know, you're bunked up with 4 guys in a room and playing games. There are scouts there. And I think, you know, so when I went to that 4D camp, what were you talking about?
The cuts? What? Portland Winterhawks? What? Yeah, anything? Cuts. If you were cut any time between.
So I went to the top of the USA camp. It was the under 18. And we're in this big room, you know, the big cafeteria room. And
packing like sardines.
Exactly. I'm sitting with all my buddies, and they have the list of who made the Ivan Olinka, the U18, the USA team, going, blah, 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 get to the bottom, no, my name. And I didn't hear myself. And I'm sitting around, you know, with all my buddies, and I just felt like embarrassed, you know. I felt bad. I'm like, how could this happen? I felt like I had a pretty good camp, you know, and like my heart was broken. I've never been that low before. I just was like, you know, I wanted to play World Juniors. I want to represent USA. I want to play with my buddies, you know, that I'm at all these festivals and tournaments with. And not only like did I not make the team, it was announced in front of everyone while I was sitting there. And I was just so embarrassed, you know. I was sad, and you know, it was a long walk back to the dorms, let me tell you, with all my buddies that made the team, you know, at the time. And you know, we fast forward, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm at freaking World Junior camp, and I wasn't going to be denied, you know. That all I could replay in my head was that me sitting in that cafeteria with all my buddies and not making that under 18 Ivan Olinka team, you know. And I just kind of, I wouldn't even really call it a chip on my shoulder, but I guess you could, you know. And I kind of just carried that with me, and even still, you know. And I end up making the World Juniors team. I told my parents, you know, this is what I want. I'm not going to be denied no matter what, you know. And I feel like at the time it wasn't super popular for Canadian Hockey League players to make that team, as you know. And it's a lot of the program guys and a lot of college guys. And I was drafted by a Canadian team, you know. Winnipeg drafted me, and I was kind of getting little jabs about that being drafted to the Canadian team. You know, like I picked that. And, you know, sure enough, it's, you know, I'm sitting on that here in the USA national anthem play at the World Juniors, and I'm looking around in Montreal. And, you know, I think that was a pretty cool moment for me. You know, it's like I proved to myself that I could do it. And I don't know, I think that was a pretty defining moment in my life and in my career.
And that relates to, of course, everything we've been talking about here. But for the parent that asked me that question, just, hey, is my son in that case ready to make this league? Or, you know, the player, hey, am I? No, you set out, you know, I won't be denied mentality. That's what you have to have. But furthermore, it's there was players that made that Ivan Hlinka team that don't even come close to having the career that you've had thus far, right? So it's like even before the whole World Juniors and making that team, it's like whatever happens in that moment, there's always that next day. And I feel when I'm, you know, I still work one-on-one group sessions at Lakewood Ice, and oftentimes I'm asked by parents, you know, certain things. And a lot of what I get, what I ask is, hey, I need to make this team next year. Hey, I'm going to the USHL, whatever, pre-draft camp. I need to, you know, and Joel Ward had a certain mentality of, I'm not going to be denied, but I don't have to do anything by next season, right? He cracked the NHL at what, 28, 29? Derek Ryan, another guy, 28, 29, yeah. Has a cup of coffee in Europe before coming over here, and he's still playing. And Tim Thomas and Jokic, well, at least he played tier three. He played in the USPHL. So there's not many stories, but there's certainly a number of stories that it doesn't matter about, you know, where you're at now. It's having that mindset of I'm going to make it. I don't care how long it takes, but I'm going to make it. This is what I got to do to make it, and make sure you have your own game plan, of course, for yourself. Yeah. But, you know, you talk about the 1% or less than of making it to the highest levels. And part of that is just having this belief that it's not going to be overnight. It's going to be a process. And how many people don't fit into that 1%? Maybe you can cut off right with that argument, 40% of people who just think so short term and not the big picture. And relating to everything we're talking about, I just think having that wide window combined with not being denied, I think is the perfect combination of doing exactly what you just did. You learn from it. You remember that feeling, went out and conquered it, which is fantastic, making that world. Well,
and for me, it's like, and for parents out there, you know, like I'm 28 years old now and I'm still trusting that process. You know, I still show up to training camp. You know, I don't have a ton of NHL games, but that's still my goal. It's still my mindset. You know, I show up in September, you know, ready to go. I'm going to make that team. You know, if it happens, you know, whatever I'm supposed to be, I know like it's going to happen. And that's, you know, wherever my feet are, it's where I belong. So, I mean, just going to keep having that mindset and that belief. And, you know, I got a great support system. I got a great family, and I get to spend a lot of time with them. And that's so important to me as well. You know, life is short, and like you said, we sacrifice so much by, you know, leaving home and you know, like left home at 14 years old. You miss out on so much, whether it's grandma's birthday or little things, you know. So, you know, for me, it's like it's so nice to be around for that and to be able to, you know, I just want to make them proud, you know, after how much they sacrificed for me. And you know, I'm still not satisfied. I'm still working for that goal. Like we talked about, you know, outside of that locker room last training camp, and, you know, still trusting that process, baby.
Well, before we give a little shout out to the, it's got to be top three all time bobbleheads. We'll get to it in a second. I think we've talked about a lot of juicy stuff leading up to this last point. Being from California, maybe the kicker is being from anywhere, but you decided to go the junior route. So did I. Mine happened after the development program. For you, what made you, whether this is general, worldwide, why the Western League route or Southern California? I mean, we are kind of at the forefront of that conversation being from California. Like 100%. We are, hey, college, Western League. Why did you choose Western League for the parents that have maybe some skepticism over anything, whether it's college, whether it's junior? Why did you
pick the junior route being from California?
Yeah, that's a great question. Definitely not an easy answer. It took a lot of time and a lot of thinking, not only with me, but with the whole, with my whole crew. For me, you know, it's like, I was just like every other kid doing the Omaha Lancers camp at El Segundo, you know, doing the USHL festivals and everything. And, you know, I actually went to Denver with Eric Comrie and we were sitting on Wozdecki, who was the coach at the time, and offered us both full scholarships. And we looked at each other. We're like, yes, we're going to Denver together. We're best friends. This is it. You know, next week later, I get drafted to Portland. He gets drafted to Tri-City. Then we're head to head, absolute rivals trying to kill each other. I'm trying to snipe him as many times as possible. You know, Portland versus Tri-City is a huge rivalry and it happened quick. But I mean, for me, Matt Bardsley, he was the head scout in Portland and he took me out to brunch, my mom, my dad and myself. And I think just that first getting to see Portland and, you know, Ryan Johansson being there, he was always messaging me on MySpace at the time, you know, he's like, or Facebook. He's like, come to Portland, come to Portland, come to Portland, come to Portland. So then I actually get there and, you know, and he's like an older brother to me and I see the way he was handling himself. And like I said, you know, all these other top NHL prospects and being on the ice with them. And, you know, I just had, like, I think I had a smile on my face the entire time I was there. And, you know, I just told my parents, you know, with the way that I have a late birthday and I just thought it would make more sense for me being in Portland the entire time, play World Juniors, hopefully then get drafted, rather than whether I go to the USHL for a couple of years, then transition to college, then hopefully get drafted. You know, for me and Portland, you know, there was a Long Beach, JetBlue, Long Beach, Long Beach to Portland, 2-hour flight.
Shout direct. Out JetBlue.
Shout out JetBlue, Long Beach. Yep. My parents got to fly, you know, it was super easy for my parents, you know. Maybe if another team in the Western League that wasn't the Portland Winterhawks drafted me, might be having a different conversation right now. Just the timing of everything and obviously still being in the U.S. and super close to home, being away from home for the first time, you know, living with the Billet family. It was super cool for my parents to just be able to hop on a JetBlue flight 2 hours and be able to come see me, you know, if I was getting homesick, because that's a pretty big ask, you know, like, I couldn't even do sleepovers at my buddies' houses in California. I was such a homebody and I still am a homebody, to be honest. But then all of a sudden, you know, I'm packing my bags and I'm in a different state. You know, it happens very, very fast. And I think my mom still hasn't gotten over, you know, it's like, it's the same thing every year. You know, you come home for a couple months in the summer and then boom, you're gone. It's not an easy career path that we chose, obviously, but highs and lows of everything, I think. And, you know, I don't regret any decisions. I think, you know, I was in the WHL finals almost every single year that I was in Portland, which is, I mean, all you could ask for is getting that experience and playing alongside, you know, the world's best at such a young age and pushing yourself every day in practice was a tryout. You know, I felt, and even still now, you know, I'm 28 years old and capping the San Diego Goals, and I still feel like every day is a tryout. You know, I just have that mindset, you know, because I've never, you know, I've had to earn everything, you know, I've never really had a ton of hype or anything like that around me, you know, so everybody wants your place and we're all replaceable at the end of the day. So I don't want to lose what I have. And this is what keeps me motivated and keeps me working every single day for more.
You punched packed a lot in that
yeah.
answer right there, which is phenomenal. And One of the reasons why I chose the Western League route is a lot like just your decision, and it's the right situation, right? And maybe if it wasn't Medicine Hat, once again, maybe I would have been a college guy, right? Yeah. And for me, it was Willie Desjardins and how many connections he had at the time and guys that have been drafted. Tyler Ennis before me, yeah. First round pick.
Tyler Ennis, I used to yeah. watch all his Medicine Hat highlights.
Unbelievable, actually. Six
yeah.
goal game?
Yeah.
Oh. you know, whether it's Loophole or Bomeister, and you know, Portland's got a long list of guys who made it to the show. And I mean, you were at a time there in Portland where Bershey and I mean Ross, even yeah, Ross, Brad Ross, Brad yeah. Ross was, you know, big Brad, time at one point.
Brad Ross taught me some serious lessons because, you know, he played a pretty gritty, hard game, and being, you know, a kid from California playing roller hockey, I wasn't really exposed to that. So shout out to Brad Ross, because it used to be pretty scary in the Western Hockey League when I was 15 years old. You never really knew what was going to happen behind the play. So taught you to be ready, stay ready.
Nino Niederreiter, yep. And Johansson, as you mentioned, and your teams were loaded, that's for sure. Appreciate that answer. That was unbelievable. Let's talk about this bobblehead. Once again, top three all time. I haven't, of course, seen every bobblehead ever made, but I have this just vision that this is the at least top three. It might even be penciled in at number one. Just talk about this real quick. The ins and outs of it. The donkey, Hansel.
Yeah,
Hansel. And yeah, just touch on this real quick.
Yeah, quickly, California cowboy, born and raised La Mirada, California. Got some animals. This is my donkey, Hansel. He's my brother. He's 30 years old, which is 2 years older than me. So I've had him my entire life. Wouldn't know what to do without him.
So he's the vet. You're the rookie.
He's the vet. Yeah, taught me a lot. He is very stubborn, keeps me in my place, but it was a super cool country night, Western theme idea that they had last summer. And they kind of shot me a little picture of the mold and they turned into reality. And it was pretty dang cool to see. And I have about 100 of them all over my house.
This is unbelievable. This is we're just gonna call it what it is. This is number one all time bobblehead. That's for damn sure.
So funny.
Chase, hey, thanks for, and I think we can, before we wrap it up, eBay.
Yeah,
get these
eBay. Yeah, hopefully I got a lot, so I mean,
get them now before they just skyrocket in value.
That's right.
Appreciate you. Thanks for coming on. Just two boys who had a dream, make it to the highest levels. From SoCal, and we made it happen. So thanks for talking a lot about your story, and just all the best the rest of the way, your rest of your career. I have big things and big hopes for you. We're all rooting for you. So appreciate the time. Any plugs?
No, just first off, thanks so much for having me. So much respect for you. And like I said, you're a trailblazer for me and the rest of the California kids. So I appreciate, you know, you gave me that hope and gave me that dream. So I appreciate you and just thanks for having me.
That's it. Thanks for tuning in for yet another episode of Eat 'Em Up. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, brother.
If you love today's content, then I'd love for you to take a trip over to VGHC.com or stop by their Costa Mesa flagship store to see what the club is cooking up for hockey fans worldwide.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on DuckStream.